Hello and welcome to the Road to Nowhere new, quote-unquote new, Marvel Champions LCG podcast, and where we can promise if you join us on this journey, we'll take you absolutely nowhere. Joss is here. I'm your host, D-House. How are you doing, Joss?
I'm great, David. How are you this morning?
I guess
maybe it's even almost afternoon for you. It's getting close.
Hey, yeah, the time zone difference is crazy, but... Doing well. It's been a crazy week for our family. I mentioned this off air, but my son, maybe messed up the growth plate in his knee, and we're just dealing with doctors and everything, and it's just been hectic. So this is a nice break from all the hecticness.
It's great that you can take this as an opportunity to step away from some of that, as opposed to it being a stressful extra thing that you feel you need to do, right? That different people can interpret that a different way, right? They could take this as too much, or just as an opportunity to disengage a little bit,
right? It's sort of like coming up to get some air, but he's in good spirits. He's happy. He's got YouTube and the iPad. He's having a great old time. No screen limits when you can't move. So,
that's right.
But anyways, we're here to talk some Marvel Champs. Very excited to jump back in again. I just want to say another thank you to everyone for the feedback we've been getting on the Discord, or even just reaching out to us. I saw someone post. I need to start screenshotting these when I see them, because I get here and I'm always like, oh, who was that again? But someone had posted in the Solo Champions League Discord that they decided to chat a bit more in the Discord and participate in the community side after listening to our podcast, because they'd been in the league for a while but never really chatted in the Discord, and so it inspired them to kind of hop into more of those conversations, which is always a great thing, and I'm really happy that was the case.
I love that. I like the idea that people are feeling that inspired to get a little more involved in the conversation, right? They hear us talking about it and think, oh, I think that does seem like a really fun thing to do. I want to get a little more involved.
Yes. And if you really want to jump in, Innsmouth Bear made a Road to Nowhere subform on the Discord for us. Very, very kind little thing he did that, just if you want to talk specifically about our episodes or something we brought up, or some mind-blowing fact that Joss said, or something really stupid that I said, throw it in there. We'd love to chat it up in there. We'll keep the conversation going.
It's a great place for feedback, right?
Right, 100%. Yeah, if you're like, ooh, I hated this, or what if you guys did this? We love that stuff, so keep tossing it out there. If you're just happening to run into this podcast and you're not sure what the heck we're talking about, this podcast is basically a review podcast for the Solo Champions League for Marvel Champions LCG. It's been running for 10 seasons now. Innsmouth Bear is sort of the creator and director of this league, and we're just some guys who love to play and decided, hey, it'd be fun to kind of recap each round that we experience and talk about what we saw and what decks performed well and what's even unique about these scenarios. But even if you don't play in the Solo Champions League, there'll be a lot of just generic Marvel Champions talk, I think, that you'll enjoy. So hopefully there's something valuable for you. Without further ado, it's season 10, round 3, Scarlet Witch against Zola. Here are the details for this past round. We had, again, Zola from Rise of Red Skull box with the Legions of Hydra modular set. This was a standard round, so you could choose to do standard 1 or standard 2. The hero, everybody was locked into Scarlet Witch. And then you just had to choose your aspect, or in your alliance with your teammates, you all had to choose different aspects. But one of the unique things that we'll get into a little bit later is we got to add some Rise of Red Skull campaign upgrades, which again is something kind of unique about this league that you can do, and everyone's trying to figure this out, and added, if I may say so, a deck building, not challenge sounds negative, but like a truly exciting kind of scenario where you could go a lot of different directions this year or this week. So we'll get more into that in a minute, but Joss, why don't you jump in with Zola specifically? Who's this villain we had to tackle?
Yeah, so the Zola, I mean, first off, I mean, before we even dig into Zola and what he's all about, where do you stand on Zola as kind of a hero or a villain that you enjoy engaging with?
He's always been a guy that I was like, if I'm going to do Zola, like, I better have a really great deck. Like, I'm not taking a, I just made this deck, I want to see what it's like in the Zola. Because that Retaliate and those minions are no joke. Like, there, you have to plan, I think, very strategically for Zola. So I remember the first time when the box came out, I think I had a Quicksilver deck or something that I was just, like, working through the campaign, and I went blindly, like, I just did. I like to do just blind, like, I'm not gonna look at the cards, I'm just gonna sit down and start playing and deal with the challenges as they come the first playthrough. And I remember taking Quicksilver, and obviously Quicksilver wants to, like, you know, you might hit for three and then ready and hit for three, or, you know, you're doing lots of different attacks and things like that. And I was like, how the heck do I do this with Retaliate and 9 health? And, like, it was not good. I played it a few times and I couldn't get the win, and I was like, I'm shelving this and I need to go back and rethink how I'm gonna play Zola. So I don't hate it. I think he's a good challenge. He's not like Ronin, like, I wanna bash my head against the wall kind of difficulty. I think he's a good appropriate difficulty.
Right. I think it feels like a very honest challenge, right? Like, I think Ronin is kind of a collection of the dirty tricks in the game.
Yeah,
is kind of how playing against Ronin feels. But I mean, so Zola has in standard, right? So we're talking about stage 1 and stage 2. He's relatively low health, 12 HP in stage 1 and 14 in stage 2. His attack stats are actually pretty low, but as you mentioned, he has Retaliate 1 on both Stage 1 and Stage 2, so you really have to be thoughtful about how on earth you're going to actually try to take him down. And then, you know, some other difficulties that he has, and this is where I would maybe call mildly dirty tricks, is his main scheme has a threat threshold of only 6, which is quite low, and can be very challenging to keep from advancing.
Yeah.
If you're not playing justice. I mean, all it takes is one bad advance and it certainly will be going over and you'll never survive a double advance. But that main scheme has this additional thing where at the start of every villain phase, you add one of these test counters, and every time you hit 3 test counters, one of the minions from his deck pops out.
Yep.
This scenario has this interesting thing where there's actually a few different ways that minions are popping out, and some of the time they're revealed and some of the time they're not revealed. So I find myself every single time double checking that I have correctly, you know, the one that pops out of the Island of Dr. Zola main scheme, it's just put into play. It's not actually, you know, you're it engages you, but it's not when revealed, so you don't have to deal with the additional when revealed effects.
Yeah, that's nice.
But there's this timer, and I mean, there's other ways that it gets accelerated, but you can look at this timer and decide, wow, should I maybe finish this scenario before the next minion pops out and all of a sudden just ramps up the difficulty even further? Which I like that decision making, you know, because in Solo Champions League, you are trying to finish what we typically call clean, right? Just having no threat on any of the schemes, having no minion health on the board, having as high health as you can possibly have on the hero side. And you have to look at your ability to max out some of those scores versus your ability to just finish in a timely way or even without losing, right? So I think Zola provides some additional interesting choices from that perspective. And then the thing he has is in his main deck, he has 3 minions, an ultimate bioservant, a Zola's Mutate, and a Berserk Mutate. And they're all annoying in different ways. But I think the Berserk Mutate is the most challenging one just because it's got Quick Strike 3. Or sorry, it's got health of 3 and it's got quick strike with 2 attack. And so you end up taking quite a bit of damage just because this thing pops out at the start of the turn, hits you with its quick strike, and then attacks you again after the villain attacks you. So you take 4 damage if you aren't able to intercept it in some sort of way.
Yeah, that's interesting. That you say Berserk Mutate is kind of the worst because he doesn't bother me as much as like the Zola's Mutate, where he's discarding cards from the top of the counter deck until the tech attachment is discarded, and then you attach it to the Mutate. Because Some of those tech cards are just absolutely bonkers and like just force you to swerve so quickly to take care of this guy. But even I could even make a case that ultimate bioservant, just the toughness sitting there and that passive effect of getting plus one attack for the attachments. It's weird because you can just ignore him, but sometimes you ignore him and he turns into this like obnoxious monster that you're kind of wondering, wait, what happened here? So that's funny that you just said it that way.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. They're all challenging in their own way. I think part of it, and we'll talk about this when we talk about what we played a little bit more, is also kind of how it leans into or works against what you're trying to do. So with what I was doing, the Zola's mutate wasn't actually necessarily that big of a deal, but the Berserk mutate felt like it was always taking four of my health away, and
yeah,
I was struggling to kind of stay at starting or above starting health overall. So that was one of the things that really was a pain in the butt. So other quick notes on Zola. I spent a little bit of time this morning just sifting through some of the other collected data sources that we have for Marvel Champions. There's, in addition to the Solo Champions League stats that Innsmouth Bear or Commissioner Bear has been collecting, there's somebody on Board Game Geek, Max Maloney, who goes by Dormammu, I've come to bargain, on on Board Game Geek, has collected about 16,000 solo games.
That's wild.
And a whole bunch of multiplayers as well. One of the things you really have to keep in mind is there's a lot of pre-con games built into that, so you kind of have to take with a grain of salt what's going on with some of the stats you see there. But, you know, on standard, Zola is, you know, up there in terms of the difficulty of the villains. He's behind Red Skull, Nebula, and Ronin in terms of the villains that are currently in the Solo Champions League rotation. And, well, we haven't played Ronin, but he's kind of in a set that's currently in the rotation.
Yeah.
And then from that data set, the win rate's about 55% on standard, right? And I mean, this is standard, not even expert. So,
yeah,
you know, you see that kind of the wider Marvel Champions community is, you know, sees Zola as a pretty big challenge. The win rate on Zola in our league is higher than that, but we still see, with a, you know, a similar number of games in Solo Champions League, about 12,000, we see that Zola is kind of a similar difficulty to Nebula, and of the villains that we've played, only Red Skull is a bit more difficult. And this is, of course, there's so many caveats in terms of what's been involved and who the heroes were and all those other things, but just kind of broadly speaking, Zola is definitely up there in terms of the more difficult heroes or villains we have. Keep on messing that. I think I've been listening to too much Critical Encounters. Keep on messing up the hero-villain divide.
Yeah, you know, what's funny is, as you're saying Critical Encounters, I remember it was a long time ago they did a podcast on Zola, and the end of the episode, I don't know if they wrote the song about Zola or they found a song about Zola, but there's a whole song about Zola.
Yeah, I think my understanding was Mike likes to write the parody lyrics, and then Daniel ends up performing them. So they did Zola to the song Lola.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. It was like, so now every time I hear or I see Zola, I just have that song in the back of my head playing. So I'll see if I can find that episode and link it in the show notes for everybody. Because if you want more Zola for some reason, you can go check that out. But all right. Anything else on Zola before we move on to the modular?
No, I mean, I think overall, I really like him as a more difficult villain. I think kind of the way he's difficult feels very fair, and I kind of know what I have to deal with. And
yeah,
you know, the retaliate can be, you have to make design decisions like you mentioned in your deck to negotiate with the retaliate,
right, like even just how you play your allies. When you're playing allies, the two blocks, the Iron Hearts, the Squirrel Girls, the, you know, just the, you can't just pop a quick attack in there without dying. I mean, it just definitely affects the way that you use your allies for sure, as one element. All right, well, let's go ahead and move on to the Legions of Hydra. This is Madame Hydra's beefy little modular set. and there was a lot of reaction to this when this round was announced. I mean, the immediate thing was not really about Zola; it was about the modular set. So talk to us about it.
Yeah, this modular set, as you mentioned, has Madame Hydra as kind of the centerpiece minion within. So she's an elite 2/2, 6 health. And she has this thing where when she attacks or thwarts, she adds further threat to the Legions of Hydra side scheme, which is actually where the challenge of the set really comes in. You know, on her own, Madame Hydra's, you know, big and a little bit annoying, but not terrible. But there's two copies of this Legions of Hydra side scheme in the deck, and it has the effect when revealed, if Madame Hydra is not in play, search the encounter deck and discard pile for Madame Hydra and put her into play engaged with you. Then shuffle the encounter deck as normal, and then put two additional threat here for each Hydra enemy in play. She's a Hydra enemy. Zola's a Hydra enemy. The chances that you have another enemy out are moderate at this point. So you're going to see, in addition to the initial three threat that this thing has, you're going to see, you know, another 4 or 6 threat get added to this thing. So you get this big thing, side scheme that comes out, plus you get Madame Hydra, plus the side scheme has a hazard, symbol on it, which is the one that makes you draw an extra encounter card.
I forget what that's called too. There's so many things that, like, in the beginning of the game that I didn't learn that now it's like encounter boost or whatever I call it, you know. You mention that. Also, I apologize for my dog in the background. We had someone ring the doorbell, and he's a feisty little guy. So sorry if you heard that.
I feel you.
Yes. I'm gonna admit right now that somehow the Marvel Champion gods were with me, but I've never once pulled Legions of Hydra or Madame Hydra in 3 games.
All
right. I didn't get great scores either, trust me. So it's a good thing I didn't pull, because it probably would have wrecked. But I got very, very fortunate in that. Like, every time it would just, I don't know, hex bolts would, you know, bolt them away or whatever it was to make sure I never saw them. So it was very interesting. So I can't speak to, like, the difficulty in this particular scenario, but it did make me nervous.
Right. Well, so I mean, it's interesting. It has a very similar type of impact on the board state as pulling Shadows of the Past and getting your Nemesis minion out with the side scheme that comes with it. Right. You get a big side scheme. You get a big minion that you have to deal with. I think, you know, broadly speaking, because of all this extra threat that gets put on Legions of Hydra, then that this combination is probably a little bit worse than your typical Nemesis set that comes out.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. I mean, maybe we should all just replace our Nemesis sets with this one just for, you know, just for fun.
So, I mean, it's almost like you're playing with 3 Shadows of the Past in the encounter deck.
Yes. Yeah. Pretty wild. Well, let's go ahead and keep it moving. Hero everyone was locked in this round was Scarlet Witch. Definitely a hero that is at least in conversation when you start talking about some of the best heroes in the game. I think there's obviously you could argue either direction, but I think she's, you know, typically seen as a very strong hero. A lot of it is based on, hey, she's got this 2-card action hex bolt that does a little bit of everything, which is pretty fantastic. So going up against a stronger enemy, being given Scarlet Witch definitely gave me a little bit more confidence. But yeah, what do you think?
Yeah, well, I mean, I fully agree. Scarlet Witch is definitely kind of on the upper end of the power level, and part of it is, you know, because she is Mystic traded, she has access to some of the card cycling cards and other things like that, so she can kind of find in her deck some of the solutions that she needs. Overall, I'm not actually the biggest fan of Scarlet Witch. I put her pretty low on my personal tier list, and the main reason, and this is, you know, this is a thing that'll probably come up in the podcast over and over again, but I'm not a big fan of the style of output randomness that is I'm trying to do a thing and then I'm going to do a random resolution and see if the thing I'm trying to do actually worked.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. So when your hex bolt is a good example, there's a little bit of randomness mitigation through her special power and through her crest.
Yeah.
But, you know, if what you need is you need to make sure that that hex bolt hits to threat, you have no way to ensure that that actually happens. You're just going to kind of hope and maybe mitigate in that direction. And so that's not a thing that I ultimately enjoy a lot. And it's interesting, you know, this is one of the heroes that if you would have asked me ahead of time, I would have told you it's designed by Michael Boggs. I looked it up. It was designed by Michael Boggs. He tends to prefer some of this type of randomness, right? Like he tends to design the villains that are, you know, flip over 10 cards and all of the minions that are in that pile come into play engaged with you, as opposed to, you know, flip over until you find a minion and put it into play engaged with you, right? Like, those are two very different types of things in terms of how big the variance is and what you're going to encounter.
Yep.
So you know, the fact that he has kind of this high variance output randomness attached to the hero is not really a surprise that was who came up with this one.
Yep. That's interesting. I guess as a game player in general, I like a little bit of variance. Not too much, not insane, but you know, one of my main games back in the day was Star Wars Destiny. That's kind of what really took off in podcasting for me. And that was a lot of dice and just some of that variance. So it definitely adds a level to my enjoyment of the game. But I completely empathize with the distaste for it too. So that's interesting in a game like Marvel Champions. Even just you can pick up the different designers of the guys. That's great.
Right. Well, I mean, so I won't belabor this too long, but you know, it's the distinction between input randomness and output randomness. So input randomness is I draw my hand of cards that are random, and now I get to make some decisions based on this random input into what's happening, as opposed to I'm going to try to play this thing and see if it works, which is the output randomness.
Yeah. It's wild. Well, you know, maybe one of the things that takes away some of the variance in this particular round was that Scarlet Witch didn't come alone, but we got these fun little campaign upgrades from the Rise of Red Skull that we got to include. It's so funny because, again, I don't play a lot of campaigns. I usually will do like 1 2-player campaign with a buddy, you know, once a year, you know, since the game is released. And then everything else is sort of like isolated solo games and everything. And I don't know, if I'm going to play through a box, I usually try to pick a different hero for each scenario just to try to get a full, you know, breadth of experience. So diving into the campaign upgrades, it was very interesting for me because I was like, I don't even know what these are. And I didn't even realize there was a basic side and there was an advanced side. And at first I was looking at the advanced side of these cards and thinking, wow, this is very good. And then someone in the Discord kindly said, that's not what you get to play. It's the other side. And I was like, I didn't even know there was another side. So talk to us about the campaign upgrades.
There were two different things that we actually got. You know, Innsmouth Bear is typically incorporating where, if you were playing the campaign, you might be at in terms of the things that you get to bring into that specific game. So, you know, at the point in the Rise of the Red Skulls campaign, these would be things you would usually have had access to. So there's 4 basic upgrades, you know, 1 for attack, 1 for thwart, 1 for defense, 1 for recovery, and they all come with different number of extra hit points kind of based on what's seen as the relative power level of having each of those stats boosted. You know, I don't know if you also saw the same thing. I kind of saw thwart as the most common one that people were picking.
Yep, 100%. I think especially for solo Champions League where you want to have a clean board.
Well, I think the other part was if you picked that one, if you had an ally that came out with 2 thwart, or if you used a hex bolt, you could free Quicksilver on your first turn because in Zola, he starts out in this Hydra prison. So he's not even in your deck, and then once you free him, he comes to your hand, and that thing has 1 plus the cost of the ally, so 5 total in this case, threat on it. And so with Scarlet Witch's base 2 threat, or thwart, and you know, like I said, a minion with a thwart of two, and then the basic thwart upgrade, you can free Quicksilver quite easily on that first turn.
Yep. Yeah, I think there was at least one game I did that, another game I didn't, because I did take the basic thwart upgrade, and it was nice to be able to be like, I can clear this pretty easily, since she comes with a base two thwart, and having three thwart is just really powerful, so that's great.
Well, and sometimes, and I already can't remember all the side schemes in this one, but you know, sometimes just having that thwart of three just lines up really well with the side schemes that come out anyway.
Yep, 100%. Yeah.
You know, I also saw somebody had mentioned that they took the recovery upgrade just for the extra health boost. Again, you know, there's a bunch of reasons why having extra health is good. You know, you can absorb some additional villain attacks at the start, but also it helps you in your stats, right? That extra health boost translates to higher health at the end, which is a higher score. I actually tried out the defense upgrade. I thought, well, you know, Scarlet Witch's activations aren't especially valuable. That's not really one of the key parts of her kit, even though she's actually somewhat well statted. But she, I was like, well, you know, why don't I, she has a defense of two. If I take the defense upgrade, that'll put us at three. And I can, since Zola's doesn't actually hit that hard, I could then just mostly ignore what's going on with Zola and focus on just pushing the game forward. That one didn't work as well as I wanted because he's got some extra stuff in his kit that brings out extra attacks, and so I was able to deal with the initial attacks, but not the extra ones.
Yeah.
Because I hadn't really set up my board set up my deck to do that, so it didn't work out as well as I wanted. But I thought it would be worth trying.
Yeah. Yep. Very good. And then we had these these tech upgrades as well. So basically you got one condition upgrade that went and just upgraded your basic powers, and then you had these other upgrades, which we've seen in the Solo Champions League before. I remember in the even last season, in the Quicksilver Absorbing Man round, I think it was. We got to see some of this in action, but you've got Emergency Teleporter, Tactical Scanner, Laser Cannon, Adrenal Stems, doing lots of different things like Emergency Teleporter, set up card, discard it, remove it from the campaign log, search your deck, discard pile for an ally, put it into play, give it a tough status card. I think we saw a lot of that. I think Tactical Scanner, same idea, but you discard it and draw five cards. And I think we saw some interesting discussions about Laser Cannon for this scenario in particular, where you discard it and deal five to the villain and every enemy engaged with you. Didn't see anybody talk about Adrenal Stems.
Agreed.
But the other three definitely got a lot of good discussion.
Yeah, and I think between those two different upgrades that you get to start in play, I think you could really lean into some different deck design decisions, or if you had a certain deck design in mind, you know, which combination of those was the most complementary to what you wanted to do. I think that was a fun extra layer of decision making that you got at the design stage.
Yeah, and I'll get it when we talk about our own decks. I'll even kind of mention some of my own kind of conflict with some of these cards too, but yeah. And then last but not least, one of the unique things, he took for this round the rescued allies from the Taskmaster scenario. Shang-Chi, Elektra, Moon Knight, and
White Tiger.
And you randomly shuffled one of those into your deck for each round, removing it if you'd already seen it. So it was kind of nice to have, just a zero cost ally popping up and possibly doing some extra things. But did they make a big impact on your games, or were they just sort of interesting addition?
Yeah, I mean, kind of nice is a bit of an understatement. You're always pretty thrilled to see any of the four of them show up in your deck.
Their
value to cost is kind of through the roof. And then you can get into some funny business with them if you're actually playing leadership as well, right? Your ability to pull them back out of the discard and other things like that. But I mean, they were always impactful. You know, it was even one of the things I always thought was fun was, you know, seeing which one and kind of recognizing within the deck that I built if I was going to have a good ability to actually hit that allies kicker or not, because every one of them has, if you play a certain resource, you get this extra beneficial effect when you play it. So you just kind of recognizing within my kit, oh, you know, I got Moon Knight, which needs the wild resource. How many wild resources do I have in my deck to be able to actually hit this kicker? You know, I enjoyed having that initial thought of if I was going to be trying to worry about that or not.
Yep. Yeah, and Moon Knight, there was one time play Moon Knight, I think you discard a wild, or you spend a wild resource, yep, and you can draw two cards. There, I can't remember the exact scenario, but I actually pulled it off, which I feel like a lot of times with Moon Knight, you don't have that wild sitting there, but I actually had it, and it like saved a round for me. It was pretty clutch. So the two cards that he gave me, pretty interesting.
Well, in this specific one, there's a neat, you know, player decision-making thing that happens, because Quicksilver actually has a wild resource on him, so you could actually choose to free Quicksilver when you have Moon Knight in your hand.
Yeah, that's a great point. That's a good point. And then, like we said, this was a standard round, so 1v2. Anything on there?
No, I mean, I think I keep on looking at who's choosing standard 2. Compared to the previous rounds, it wasn't quite as top heavy as before. It was, you know, 33% of the people in flight 1 and 20% of the people in flight 3. So it's kind of a lot more even across the flights in terms of the number of people that were taking standard 2. I think these extra upgrades and the fact that Scarlet Witch is a pretty powerful hero made people feel, you know, comfortable to make this choice overall.
Yep. Yeah, I did not have the courage to go standard 2. That's there was no debate there. So, speaking of flights, as we move into our personal stuff, Joss, would you believe it? But I have clawed my way out of the training grounds and ended up in flight 1.
I love it.
It's clearly a mistake. There was a computing error. Some Innsmouth Bear's calculator had a malfunction. I don't know. But the ironic part, I think I told you this. Sorry, I posted this in the Discord. But woke up that morning on Sunday looking forward to the results, thinking, hey, I'm going to finally be out of training grounds, getting past that 50 XP. And then looked, and I couldn't find my name for a while. And I was like, wait, what happened? Did I forget to submit results? Like, and then my friend pointed out, he texted me, he's like, buddy, you're flight 1 in dead last. And I said, oh, that is clutch right there. Dead last, flight 1.
Right. So I'm going to look at this as you living in constant fear of relegation.
Yes. Oh, that's right. Yeah, I posted the Ted Lasso GIF in the Discord. Did you watch Ted Lasso?
I sure did.
And so if you haven't seen the show, but it's basically this American football coach goes and coaches a European soccer team, and they're in fear of relegation like all of season 1. So it's pretty – but he's got this piece of paper that just says believe that he slaps above his desk and above his office. And so that's what I'm going to be doing all season, just slapping the believe. I believe no relegation this year. Just kidding. It's going to happen.
Keep the hope alive. I mean, I think as long, I don't know exactly how it all pans out, but I think as long as you can maintain 100% win rate, you don't have to fear. Like, that's part of the tier breakdowns is kind of 100% win rate. I don't know if there's anybody with 100% overall win rate that's in anything other than tier 1.
Yeah,
I'd have to look more carefully, but
gotcha.
That's kind of a key piece. I was, you know, like you were saying with the campaigns, you just kind of jump in and play, and then after the fact go and see, okay, you know, what could I have done differently? That's kind of how I showed up in Solo Champions League. I was like, hey, one of the things that counts for score is going fast. So I tried to go fast and had a, you know, decent handful of losses in my early time in the league. And so I've just been, you know, slowly recovering from those early losses in terms of my overall stats.
Yeah. It's tricky learning all the different intricacies of this league, but I enjoy it. It's definitely a good challenge. Let's dive into like our personal choices, like what kind of direction we went with our decks. I'll jump in first. But I was on, for my alliance, I was on leadership, which is funny. It looks like we were on the same, at least, aspect, but definitely did it a little different this time. This time I actually took, borrowed a concept that Tony Tails had introduced a while back for a sneak attack version of leadership. So sneak attack's the one cost event where you get to play an ally from your hand that shares a subtype with your hero, but at the end of the round, if they're still around, they go to the discard. So basically you get to put that in there. Go Down Swinging is a zero cost event where you can discard an ally and deal damage to the villain equal to their cost. So the whole concept is play really expensive allies, sneak them in there, and then maybe hit them for extra with Go Down Swinging. The great thing is it works really great with Scarlet Witch's Chaos Magic, where you can play a card from your hand. Instead of paying resources, you discard cards from the encounter deck. And then what I really liked about his version was he went with three copies of Meditation, which is the zero-cost basic card where you can exhaust your hero and alter ego to reduce the cost of a card by three. The problem with Meditation is kind of like if you don't get it that first turn, it really feels bad when you're drawing into it later in the game, unless you have a hero that really likes to flip back and forth. But what I really liked about her is she's got that natural ability to discard and draw some more cards. She's got Spiritual Meditation to dig. There's just lots of kind of abilities to pull that meditation and a card that goes with it, some expensive stuff. So in a theoretical turn, I was, getting a three cost reduction card from meditation, maybe a free card from Chaos Magic, sneak attacking a five cost ally, and then popping Emergency Transporter, getting Nick Fury to draw three more cards, so that I could just keep digging and all that. So there were some pretty crazy round ones that I end up with three giant allies. One or two of them were going away, but definitely came out swinging round one for sure.
Love it.
It worked decently enough. I got wins in all three rounds. The statistics on each round weren't great. Especially the round three, I had two of those. Two of his minions that pop out and get the tech upgrades, and so they were big old, seven health, five health guys. And if it was that moment where I'm like, oh gosh, do I try and slow down and clean this up, or is it going to get even worse? And opted for this is going to get worse if I don't end this. So, but the third game, I actually tried a different strategy. Instead of bringing out Fury, because of my hand, I actually brought in Captain Marvel ally, with the transporter. And she's got the ability where you can discard the top four cards of your deck, and if you discard a lightning resource, you do three damage. If you discard a second one, you stun that enemy. So my hope was I could pull her. She gets tough. She does three damage and stuns Zola. So theoretically, like, the next two activations of Zola aren't going to do anything, and then I can start swinging with Captain Marvel. So it was a great plan in theory, and then I discarded zero lightning resources, so that was fun. But I went for the variance, like I said. I went for the swing big, swing for the fence. So I do think if I could go back, I might have gone for Tactical Scanner instead. I don't know that bringing in Fury was that necessary for what I was doing with this deck. So I think maybe having the extra two cards could have been even better to try to pull off some of the combo pieces of Sneak Attack and Go Down Swinging, but... But it was fun. I hadn't really done a deep dive into like the sneak attack concept, and so it was fun to get that going.
Well, yeah, there's lots of discussion of kind of the tactical scanner with Fury, emergency teleporter with Fury versus tactical scanner, and I think one of the bigger drawbacks is ultimately you don't really get to take advantage of his tough, because. Usually when you get tough on an ally, it means they get a block and then they're around again after. And with Fury, you don't get that added benefit, which that's kind of the downside. But, we can talk about that a little bit more because the Astrodar's Justice deck really leaned into just digging for Fury instead. It's too bad that, it's probably for the better, but it's too bad that an emergency teleporter is a hero only action, because your ability to set up that initial meditation would be even better if you could do that from the alter ego side, right?
Yep, for sure. And it would have been great. He built the deck initially, but I never had any problems having a meditation and a target for meditation and opening hand. Right. So between, I mean, I even ran Mansion, which I never run Avengers Mansion in this league because it just feels too slow. But on the off chance that it could give me an extra card, you know, I did drop it one round. It was my best option for round one for meditation, and it was helpful. You know, it's still a little slow, but still helpful.
It is interesting, actually, because even in Solo Champions League with Scarlet Witch, you still often see people choosing Avengers Mansion, because if you get Chaos Magic in your initial hand and Avengers Mansion, it then becomes worthwhile. Chaos Magic is the one that lets you play a card for free and then discard cards equal to the number, the cost of the card. So those really high expensive cards can actually be very playable on the first turn.
Yeah, for sure. Well, what did you go with?
I played around a lot. I continue when these big upgrades, these tech upgrades especially, are in play, I kind of try to prioritize playing things that I might not otherwise try to play. Just take advantage of the fact that you can try decks that are more fun, kind of like the one that you did, and still actually get pretty respectable scores, as opposed to just trying to go for, you know, an optimal score with that. I it's just been fun to take advantage of some of those things. So I played around with a bunch of different Voltron decks. So that's the idea that you get an ally out, put a bunch of upgrades, and then just kind of try to keep that ally alive to do all the work for you. And there's lots of allies, either the ones that come in people's specific kits or other allies that are worth doing that with. So the first one I tried out was actually, you know, based on what I saw was one of the more popular decks on the Marvel Champions database. It was just a Quicksilver Voltron deck. So since Quicksilver was already just sitting there waiting for you to free him from the Hydra prison, you could get him on the board in turn one and start putting things down on him. So I tried that. He has two attacks a turn. So what you want to do is get, Sidearm on him, which gives him range so he can avoid Zola's Retaliate.
Yeah, that's key.
And then once you do that, you're basically, you know, hitting him with first aid and trying to keep him alive while you're letting him do work, you know, get some other upgrades on him as well. But so I tried that out. That was pretty fun. I posted a video for that and it worked reasonably well. Not stellar, but it was definitely fun.
Yeah. By the way, as you're talking about that, I'll try to, one of the feedback points we got was when we mentioned videos or other content, to throw it in the show notes. So I'm going to try to remember to put your link to your YouTube channel in the show notes so people can check it out. Because seriously, if you're listening to this and you haven't seen Josh's videos, I mean, it's just great content. I mean, you learn scenarios and I love them. So keep doing them. They're really helpful. But yeah, keep going. What was your next one?
Yeah, thanks. So I ended up ultimately landing on the Yondu Voltron deck. So Yondu is a minion that already comes into play with range, so you didn't have to worry about the sidearm, but also he doesn't take consequential damage from your attacks. So what I was finding is the upkeep on Quicksilver was a lot of work, trying to just actually keep his health,
because
he's losing two a turn from consequential damage because he's attacking twice. So I decided I wanted something that was actually really low maintenance once it was set up, and Yondu was pretty good. With the stat booster upgrades and Sky Cycle, you could get him up to 3 attack plus an extra ping damage from the Power Gloves, which is after the minion attacks or thwarts, you get to just do 1 damage anywhere, which is really good for taking care of tough. And then Yondu also has 2 thwart as his base thwart. Even though he takes consequential damage with that, you know, in a pinch, he was also really great for thwarting. And since I was bringing him into play with Emergency Teleporter, he also had a tough on him. Since he didn't take consequential damage, that tough could just stay until I actually needed it for a blocker.
Oh, that's so good.
He was pretty awesome. I actually, you know, my games didn't go quite as well as I might have hoped. I was, you know, somewhere in the middle of the pack of Flight 2. But it was a really steady deck, because once he was built, and he was pretty easy to build, you know, anything that got thrown at me by the scenario, I'm pretty sure I had to deal with either Legions of Hydra or Shadows of Past 2 out of 3 games and still had a pretty respectable score.
Yeah, that's awesome. Love that. All right, well, for time's sake, let's jump into the results, the thing that everyone's been waiting on. So looking at just percentage of use, again, the interesting thing about this season is all the alliances and some of the, you know, different groups taking different aspects. But in first place was leadership at 28%, which we both use, so I guess that makes sense. 27% was justice. Aggression was at 20%. Protection at 17%. I feel like protection's always in fourth. And then basic at 8%. So there were some people who went with the basic, which is that's a solid move. But even just looking at kind of generically kind of average scores for the round, I think the interesting thing to me, so win percentage for the league was 86%, 6.1 turns. Villain score was 86. The scheme score was 62, which felt very low, but also made me feel a little bit better about some of my scores. Hero score at 82, and then approval rating at 82.2. So, any thoughts on all that?
Just for those who aren't entirely familiar with the league, the villain scheme and hero scores are basically, you know, the villain score is how much minion damage is still, or in the case of a loss, it's a little bit different, but we're just talking about in the case of a win, how much minion health is still on the board compared to the villain's overall health. There's, you know, I don't remember exactly how it pans out, but that, you know, you lose points from down from 100 based on the health that's there. And then the scheme score is very similar, you know, how in terms of if you look at all the threat that is available across every stage of the main schemes, how much threat is still on the main and side schemes at the end of the game. That's how many points you lose. And then hero score is how much below your starting health you are. And this can go up to 110. It caps at 110. And allies that are in play, contribute to this.
Yep. We got to talk about this 100% win rate on basic.
Way to go, 8% of you. It was 9 players.
Nine players. No losses. That's incredible. I don't even know what to say. I need to see these basic decks because I'm very curious. What made it so successful? Maybe it's power in all of us was just, you know, the trick.
Yeah, we'll get into that a little bit when we look at kind of some of the different decks that were floating around. One of the big things specifically with the Mystics is there are a bunch of Mystic-only basic cards that kind of bolster those decks and actually make those specific heroes more viable in basic than kind of any other type of hero.
Yeah, because even Sorcerer Supreme, I was like, I even wavered on whether to play it or not because it felt too slow. I opted not to, but I debated very strongly whether I should. Let's get in. We've got, you know, 12 to 15 more minutes. What decks do you want to talk about?
I think if I was playing another game, I would call, you know, like the meta defining deck. I think, you know, one of the first things, and this came out of my actual alliance chat, but Astrodar quickly found this, you know, justice deck that got really well refined to be, you know, completely viable as a 3-turn win with, you know, a more or less clean board.
Yeah, and, that's wild.
You know, part of it was just kind of how some of the justice cards actually line up with what was going on. The basic premise of the deck was, you know, in this argument of emergency teleporter versus tactical scanner, because Wanda has so much card cycling available to you, if you did the draw with tactical scanner, I mean, I think you make it roughly 2/3 of the way through your deck in on your first turn if you want to.
Yeah.
And so your ability to find Nick Fury is quite high. And then And so you get Nick Fury out. You've seen just a crap ton of your deck. You're usually going to play one of the Molecular Decays, which is her 3-cost, 5-damage attack event that you flip over a couple encounter cards and apply the boost icons in addition to that. So it's usually kind of doing 7 or 8 damage. And so it was basically designed to either advance or be on the cusp of advancing Zola to stage 2 by the end of the first turn.
Yep. That's wild. It followed was such a great, great call there. Cause I was thinking like so many times like followed, it's a 1-cost justice upgrade, attached with side scheme, max 1 per scheme, response when attached, scheme is defeated, deal 4 to an enemy. And knowing that it comes with the built-in side scheme right away, so it's never a dead card in your opening hand. That's smart. I like that.
Well, and the minion that starts in play on the scenario has 4 health. It has tough as well, but it has 4 health, so this is just going to be able to take care of that thing on its own, right? So that's what I was saying. It's kind of very well-tuned to this very specific scenario. And so him and I did a team-up play of this and that we recorded, and I know somebody commented that it was, you know, by the end of the first turn, just kind of the board state was completely preposterous in terms of what we were able to accomplish.
That's amazing.
So I think, you know, I think this for me anyway really changed my frame of mind in terms of what was possible in this. I still went with the Voltron Yondu deck, but you know, the fact that this 3-turn clean win was available to you was quite remarkable. We saw some people do similar things with other aspects as well. It's just that kind of this Justice one just had all these little things like this followed that you brought up. They were just so well tuned to the needs of the scenario.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really good. What else?
Well, you were asking about the basic, right?
So yes,
I reached out to some of the folks that did well in some of the different aspects as I tend to do, and the basic one. So I think Garnito.
Yes, I just opened that.
What's going on? Yeah, with theirs, and you know, it's a pretty kind of standard looking basic deck again. Scarlet Witch, being a Mystic, gets bolstered by some of these extra cards that are only available to Mystics. And specifically, Spiritual Meditation, which is one that allows you to draw 2 cards and then discard 1. So in terms of card cycling and looking for solutions, it just makes it way easier. Then, like you said, the power in all of us, since you're playing all basic, you know, so the only cards you have are either basic cards or what's in your kit, and you can target all sorts of things, and it also makes it a bit more viable to play some of the bigger support cards like Helicarrier, Quinn Carrier, and Avengers Mansion. And you know, I don't know how much use folks got out of those specific cards in this scenario, because it was actually ultimately relatively fast, so the payoff for those was not necessarily as high.
Yeah.
But as we've been discussing in our previous episodes, like the basic ally kit is pretty strong, right? Like the pool of basic allies are pretty strong. So we see Blade, Ironheart, Machine Man, Mockingbird, Nick Fury, Quicksilver was in her kit, and Spider-Man Miles.
Yep. That's I think we mentioned this last podcast, but the basic suite of allies, I mean, it's just very solid. You can't really, you look at this list and you're like, yeah, I don't mind taking this even if I do have an aspect. So I think that's really good. I even noticed Garnito ran Death Focus, which is great for Hex Bolts, you know, because that was one that, and you know, was on the chopping block for me. I think running a couple sidearms doesn't seem like Garnito's going for the Voltron, but you know, the +1 attack in range, always great. And he ran a couple target acquireds too, so you know, there, I don't remember all the different boost options, but I do remember there's at least a few of them that had the place a test counter on the main scheme type of things, and the Berserk Mutate, place a test counter, you know, the boost effect and some of the stuff like that. So now I'm looking at all the minions have the boost icon. So I didn't even recognize that. So that's a great call.
The I got burned by the Berserk Mutate boost effect. multiple games, like multiple of my actual games. That one is so brutal. So it's add one of those test counters, and then the attack, or I think thwart as well, but at least the attack gets a boost equal to the number of those test counters. And it was always two or three when it happened to me. So I really got burned by those.
Yep, that's really good. Well, let's hit aggression. What'd you see in aggression?
Yeah, so the aggression, I wasn't able to track down too many decks. Fangthane, who just actually moved into first overall in the league, had played aggression, and they said that they'd used the basic thwart upgrade to balance out, you know, the aggression attacks and the heavy hitting allies. So that, you know, that makes a lot of sense. Again, we were talking about thwart upgrade was kind of the most common one in tactical scanner to get that huge initial hand. So just kind of doing aggression things. If you go fast, a lot of the problems that Zola poses don't come up as much, and you're much less likely to see Legions of Hydra side scheme, right? So there's a lot of benefit just to going fast. And then Reader 1 had this amazing stat line. So a four-turn game, 0-0 in terms of villain health and 0 threat, and then 26 health on the hero side between allies and Scarlet Witch on the end of the game. So that was the Agent of Shield. So that was the highest scoring round in a single game.
Yeah.
I thought that was just like a spectacular game. So that's always a fun stat to see, right? Because it's not always the top performing person that gets that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really 26 hero HP is a huge number. Now I'm curious who was on the, now I'm like, but you have some of those big aggression. I'm even Hulk at 2. You get 5 health. There's definitely some great little guys that can pop out and do some great things.
Right. And Turkey Guy was one of the only folks who had a deck that was shared. And that one actually was just a very small handful of actual aggression cards. There was only 3. It was Audacity, which was deal 1 damage to the villain, and Energy Spear. And, you know, one of the advantages of Energy Spear is it has piercing. So this was more or less kind of a basic deck with just a little bit of extra damage. But since there is a decent amount of tough in this scenario, that Energy Spear with piercing was pretty good. So that's pretty cool. And they did, you know, reasonably well overall.
Yeah, because he was bringing in Rocket which is great, because Rocket hops in there with the teleporter, gets plus 3 attack, overkill, piercing with the energy spear. I mean, what? So he's swinging for, was it 6 with piercing and overkill, which is, I mean, because you start with that minion who has the tough and 4 health. So that's wild. I like that. That's cool.
Yeah. So that's, I mean, that was this other neat thing is tactical scanner allowed you to cheat in an ally that you actually,
or emergency teleporter,
or sorry, thank you, otherwise ineligible to play based on it being trait locked. So something like Rocket, where you can only play it if you're a guardian hero, you're able to still bring it in with tactical scanner. So there's, I keep on saying that, emergency teleporter.
Yeah.
So that was kind of a neat choice, and we see that somewhere else. And then the I won't go through all the different, there's now 4 different categories of, you know, kind of best worst scores in the round, but my favorite one is actually Skull Infiltrator, which is the lowest scoring victory, which, I mean, I'm sure that's the kind of thing that you're really happy just to have gotten out of that game with a victory usually. But so this is awesome. It was 7 turns, so like not especially slow, but 8 villain health, and so you've defeated the villain, so that means that's 8 minion health, 19 threat. So you, knowing this scenario, you absolutely know that Legions of Hydra was on the board.
Yeah.
8 of those health is probably, you know, going with Madame Hydra, and right, there was probably a few Hydra minions out, and you drew Legions of Hydra, and you're just like, no, like I have to end this, and I don't even care how bad of a score that is.
Yeah, I gotta give a special shout out to him. It's Iron Bryce is his name. And he had sent me a message because he saw me posting about the Road to Nowhere podcast, because he used to listen to my Star Wars Destiny podcast years ago.
Right.
And had reached out, and this was their first time playing in the league. They jumped in because they'd found the podcast and jumped in. So I love that he jumped in, and I see him participate in all kind of conversations. So Bryce, welcome to the league. Congrats on your your school infiltrator badge of honor. Well done.
Love it. You know, we already talked a little bit about some of the leadership ones.
Yeah.
Matthew Noodles, my alliance mate. He was one of the people who chose to do the rocket version. Of course, didn't have access to the energy spear, so didn't get the extra thing.
Yeah.
But, you know, just the kind of work that rocket can do because of that +3 attack and overkill against a very high minion scenario was awesome. He also went with trying to get Quicksilver out as quickly as possible and get sidearm on him, which takes his attack from 2 to 3, gives him range so he doesn't take the Zola retaliate damage, and so it's a pretty efficient damage if you can actually afford to pay for Quicksilver in the first place, because it'll pay out over multiple turns. And then did some protection-y things to keep Quicksilver alive to get even way more value out of that and out of Rocket too.
Yep.
So he ended up designing this specifically to take on Standard 2, and ended up having just kind of some spectacular, you know, his scores looked like most people who did pretty well in Standard 1's scores, honestly. So that worked out really well. And Kennedy Hawk had the fastest of the Standard 2 games overall, and with a 3-turn average overall, which is with protection, which is like this very amazing thing to think about, somebody being able to do that with protection,
especially because I know he hates protection, so green cards are gross. Well,
so that's why he like really, really showing off, flying in the face of protection.
So that was
overall, I think, kind of some of the things we saw, and there was lots of interesting choices that came from being able to use these tech upgrades and things like that, right? Cheating in those allies or going for just huge starting hands and things like that.
Yeah. I wonder if Kennedy was bringing in multiple man with the teleporter. No, he's going tactical scanner, so he's probably just drawing into it naturally. Yeah.
Yeah. The challenge with that one is you're almost guaranteed to end up with a couple multiple men in your hand.
Yeah.
So you have to be really thoughtful about when you might want to actually play them.
Yes.
Right? You might want to play them before you do the big second draw or something. I don't know.
Yeah, that's good. I do have to do a little hat tip to there's clearly like a class of deck builder in this league where even just picking up like the Rocket Raccoon thing, where Rocket Raccoon has a play restriction where you can only play if your identity has a Guardian trait. And we've seen people play like Make the Call, you know, allows you to pull it out of your discard and put it into play. Mm-hmm. So you can get around those play restrictions. But figuring out that the emergency teleporter also gets around those play restrictions is some pretty next level deck building theory that I don't think a lot of people just naturally pick up on those things. So the ones who did, I just got to do a little hat tip and say, well done. Like that's the kind of stuff that I love about like stuff like this league.
Yeah, no, I also just kind of like when, you know, it gets to the point where everybody's talking about all these just little advantages that they can build into their deck.
Yeah.
I love that stuff.
Yeah, for sure. We're a little over time. We'll just mention briefly, we are in the middle of round 4 right now. This round we are tackling Red Skull with the Hydro Assault and Masters of Evil modular sets. This is an expert round now, so we're venturing into expert territory. The heroes for this round are Iron Man, Miss Marvel, Rocket Raccoon, Venom, or Gamora. We're all locked into the leadership aspect, which immediately I was a little sad because the Sinister Motives box that we all just got has no leadership cards. So I was hoping for something there, but and then we get some more Rise of Red Skull camp. Campaign upgrades, the tech upgrade, condition upgrade, and two rescued heroes this time. So kind of similar to last round, but definitely a unique challenge. So I've started building, ironically, I honestly laughed because I had already built Gamora leadership, and then I saw you posted Gamora leadership, and I was like, of course we're on the same deck again. Like, this is that's hilarious. So
I've played everybody but Ms. Marvel on this scenario already, just to kind of try out the different things to get a sense of what's going on.
Are you
going
to try Ms. Marvel? Because that seems like a very massive uphill battle.
No, I'm not. I mean, I love Ms. Marvel, but in a scenario that you can't flip to AE, she just kind of loses some of what's interesting and fun about her. So
yeah.
I'm not masochistic in my choices. I like to try out the ones that make me feel like I'm, you know, competent. And so I don't just kind of pick the hardest one. And I think Ms. Marvel's an amazing hero, but she doesn't synergize that well with
Doesn't. But it does make me very curious about who's going to have the top performing Ms. Marvel deck. Like, I know there are players out there that they'd love to be the one to unlock something that stands out, some kind of standout Ms. Marvel deck. So I'm very curious. If you're out there and you're tinkering, I see you, and I can't wait to see what you do, because I'm not doing it, but I believe in you.
Well, Ms. Marvel is actually a really interesting one, I think, because, you know, I've seen from chat in some of the different places where people are talking about Marvel champions, right? There's a bunch of people that just Ms. Marvel, like, is the hero in
yes.
the game for them.
Yeah.
They just love her. And so it'll be awesome to see. I bet there's going to be a few people that are in that sort of category that take on Ms. Marvel and just do great.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm excited. And so I know Sinister Motives officially released here in America, I think, around the world. Do you know, actually, is it released in all these other places?
I am not entirely certain. The Canadian release dates and the American ones are always the same, so I'm not sure about anywhere else, actually.
Because I would like to start having some open conversation about it on the podcast, especially because we're going to start throwing all those cards into our decks. So this might be our last Sinister Motives absence from the podcast. We might be able to get into that, but we're even talking maybe after the season we do a Sinister Motives episode or something like that, just between seasons. And so that's coming, and I'm excited. I've been enjoying it, so I can't wait to talk about it even more. But any final thoughts?
No, I mean, I was just going to say that I think, you know, the deck building cards are now in the pool. And like you said, because of leadership, we're not going to see many, even though there are some powerful trait locked basic allies that we see
yes.
in there. So playing leadership means we actually could have access to them, even though they're not necessarily specifically that useful in this scenario. But, you know, it's now a thing in our lives, right?
Yep. Yeah, it did. I did start going through the basic ones of like, what could I play just to say I played it? You know, like, just, well, it gives enough value to, we'll chat next episode. We'll see what happens there. So, all right. I think that'll do it. Hey, as always, give us some feedback. Let us know what you like, what you don't like. And, thanks for just, encouraging this fun little podcast journey with us and joining us on the road to nowhere. Josh, it's been a pleasure.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
All right, see you next time.